No Gina. Well, good evening. Welcome to the October 17th meeting of the Planning Commission. And we will get started right away. First with introductions, starting on our far left.
Aaron Murphy, North.
Robert Baglio, South Kitsap. And let's see, we have an adoption of the agenda. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Okay. We will continue on with the approval of minutes.
Second.
Excuse me. Discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor? Opposed? Abstain. All right, looks like with that, we have an administrative update from Louisa.
Good evening. I haven't seen you for a while, so pleasure to be here tonight. I know historically the Planning Commission is interested in the department's budget, so we thought to give you an update on it. And this is not the complete presentation we have for the budget committee, but toward the end of the slide there will be a link to it. I'm not very when it comes to technology. There we go. Okay, so we just kind of cut to the meat of it to show you guys. The earlier on the few slides talks about the departments because some of the members on the budget committees, they're not familiar with the department and also for the benefit of the public. So, but I didn't include that in this presentation or this briefing with the Planning Commission. So we started off to remind the board and to introduce the work plan of the department. And we gave you a copy of that already. And they are, just to show you, they're available online. So if you want, we try to update it once in a while, but not a lot because we're not moving a lot of projects very, very quickly as much as we like. So you can always check online to see the updated version. And one thing we also provided to the committee is in addition to the work plan, we also have a 5-year kind of a strategic plan, action plan. It's kind of hard for the public to digest for two reasons. One, it's not done yet, and so we still need to tweak it to make it more easily for the public to understand. And we are actually using this to work toward as all the projects is against the FTE so that we know what are the resources required. So it's 10 pages. It's quite technical. The board did request that we put up a much more simplified version along with the timeline. That would take some time, but we're working on it. And once that's done, we will post it online as well. And that's really show the, you know, 5-year horizon. What are the projects that we would like to tackle? So that's what we introduced to the budget committee. And also explain the program by funding. And we have different programs in DCD, and a lot of the public actually not familiar with it. They think of us as permitting, maybe co-enforcement or sometimes maybe in inspections, but it's a lot more to it. And of course, the long-range planning, community planning, that's long-range planning, including building, I guess they put in the surface as well, planning of the day, investigation, fire co-compliance, the green area, those programs funded by general fund, And with the other portion of our budget is funded by Special Revenue Fund. A lot of people have been calling it enterprise, but it's actually not enterprise. We're Special Revenue Fund. Enterprise is for infrastructure, so public works, they have enterprise. So in our special program, Special Revenue Fund, we have different programs. We have the development engineering, and we have the grant, and also fee permit. So I think this pie chart, it's better kind of explaining as far as the percentage and the program. And as you can see, our general fund is very small. It's only 24%. Just the co-enforcement and the fire investigation alone requires a lot of resources. So it's very tight for us. And try to squeeze in long-range planning, which is the sections that you deal with most frequently for the Planning Commission, because they look at policies, they look at co-amendments, so you will work with them a lot. The good thing is we filled all the vacant position in long range. The bad news is we still, you know, can't catch up. There's just a lot of work to do. So in our budget for 2018, we are asking for a permit tag, which is funded by fee, Special Revenue Fund, and we color coding it for the committee so that it's easier for them to kind of figure, you know, make the comparison. We're asking for a construction inspector, and that actually, that's just a technical term, but the function is to serve as a fire marshal for fire investigation, risk check program. The risk check is essentially a fire prevention program. It's just that in Kitsap we call it risk check because of the way the program is. They look at which use has the highest risk, and they go out and do fire prevention program with those, such as apartments and hospitals, those types of uses. We also asked for a long-range planner to do co-amendment. We asked for abatement fund for the nuisance, complaint, and Kitsap Nuisance Abatement Team is KNAT. That's the acronym for it. That's the program where they constantly have to go out there to enforce the code and to address the nuisance issue. And the last property we have, actually the demolition of that building, because it was actually has asbestos and it has lead, and it was extremely costly, basically wiped the reserve fund that we have. So we have to ask from general fund for more to kind of replenish. And that's a one-time ask. We're still looking for other source of revenue to help with that reserve. And the training for a new deputy is really, like I said, that construction inspector is a fire marshal position. And when you hire somebody, you need to have the training funding to train the fire marshal. So, and this kind of gave the committee an idea of, although we filled the long-range position, so we have three long-range planner, they are reaching maximum capacity. There's just a lot of work sitting there, and people have to do it. And, of course, there are priorities. Right now, we've got a little break between the comp plan update and the shoreline management plan. It's a very short period of time. Pretty soon, we'll have to dive right back into all the state mandate. So we need to figure out how to tackle all these projects. The clear one without color is the asked position and also the one unassigned. So in addition to all the stuff we identify and assign, there's still a lot of projects that are sitting on the side that we have not assigned. And having said that, there are a risk management action plan update that's not listed in the slide that we found out we have to do. Vision 2040, PSRC is updating that plan. We have not assigned to anybody. That's not listed. Climate resiliency that we found out we have to do, not listed. So there's still a number of projects potentially. And Clear Creek, we also have that issue, the maintenance. It's a huge undertaking. Again, not listed. So, but those other things actually will kind of bump everything else because of the priorities. So you can imagine why we have to ask for an additional planner. And so that's kind of what we presented. And this is the link that I have that you can, if you're interested in it, look at the entire PowerPoint. The rest is just talk about each section, what we do. If you're really interested in it, I certainly can go through it, but I think you're very familiar with what we do. And so the outcome, Ed, just so you know, the good news is we get the $100,000 one time for the Kitsap Nuisance Abatement Fund, which will allow us to do maybe one major cleanup. If there's another demolition we have to do, maybe a couple of minor, but that's all we can do. So we need to continuously seeking funding. We got the risk check, the fire marshal, that was granted. We got the training for the fire marshal, of course. And we got the permit tech at the front counter. That one is fee funded. So usually it's not an issue because we're not asking from general fund. We didn't get the planner. So just so you know, we didn't get it. And you saw all the list of work. So we are briefing the board on October 25th to tell them how we're going to tackle all the projects. And it is what it is. So we have to figure it out, the priorities.
Two questions. One, can you go back to your slide with the pie chart? I'm just curious, as we came out of a long recession, year over year, you've got 50% this year, 55% of your permitting fees being that function of your budget total. What was it 12 months ago, 24 months ago? Are we still on the increase?
I don't remember that, so don't quote me on it. I think we're doing better coming out of the recession, mainly because of the big projects. So we cannot rely on that. We have Harrison, which is a huge project. Right. We have a Central Kitsap School District doing big projects.
Yeah.
The Veteran Clinic. But those will be done in a couple of years. So the revenue, it looks maybe good for now, but we cannot count on that.
Okay, and I was just wondering how much it's actually increased. You know, was it 3.5 2 years ago and 4.5 last year?
I wasn't prepared for that.
I know. So, just the curiosity maybe you could bring back for us.
Yeah, my budget person can probably.
Yeah, even an email to us or whatever.
Yeah.
And then what was the abatement building you were referring to?
I actually don't know the location, but it took a long time. It was years in the making to get to that point.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
No.
And that's all I have.
Okay.
Oh, no, I have one more thing. I'm not sure if how many of you know Stanton to move on to better things. So we lost another amazing supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to recruit again. Lots of changes in DCD continuously.
Okay.
So thank you.
Thank you. Looks like the next item is a work study briefing. Liz Williams, administrative code updates and minor code amendments. Nope.
No, I'm
you're not Liz.
Liz. Liz has more hair than I do. Up here, anyway. My name is Dave Ward. I am the manager of planning and environmental programs for DCD. And I'm here to introduce the code amendments that you have in your packet. Look something like this. And we put it in Halloween colors for you. And then Liz, I'm joined by Liz Williams and Darren Gurney, who are both long-range planners with the department, and they will follow up on the details of each of the recommendations or suggestions that we're going to present to you. I'm mostly here for context. So as Louisa pointed out, we have a list that we maintain of, and I would describe this as a loose list of suggestions and ideas and thoughts about potential code updates that we might be making. It's in your packet. Looks something like this. It's a thick packet. And we have about 200 of these thoughts and ideas. They are not recommendations or suggestions of the department at this time. These are things that as we've progressed through work over the past 6 or 7 years, these things, whenever an issue comes up and we go, okay, there's a thing that we need to think about, or we need to rethink this part of the code, or there's some change here that needs to happen. We put it on the list and then queue it up for later. As Louisa pointed out, we are right now, we have a brief window of time. We've just finished up with the critical areas ordinance. The Shoreline Master Program update isn't quite ready for prime time yet, but it will be soon. We're not ready for to roll into the heavy lift of the comp plan of the next edition of the comp plan. So we have this brief window of opportunity, and we're trying to take advantage of this brief window to start to tackle some of these 200 plus items here. So this long list here is not, it's for your information. It is not for consideration today. What is for consideration today is shown in Attachment 1 and Attachment 3. What we've done over the past couple of months is we've taken that long list of 200 and we're tried to get our heads around the magnitude of the list and everything that's in it. So our first swipe at the list was basically a triage process. We wanted to identify which of these potential changes are just administrative changes. These would be the housekeeping type items, fixing broken references, clarification, simplification, that sort of thing. We wanted to clarify which are the minor items on the list. These are more substantive code issues that may need more public process, and we want to go out and get some public feedback on some of these issues, but they're not necessarily the real heavy lift items. And then we also have the major items. This is a much smaller section of the list, and this is a portion of the list that are the big heavy lifts. Some of these things, you know, the SMP, the Shoreline Master Program update, that would fall under that category. Critical areas ordinance would fall under that category. Some of these other big items. So most of the list is either minor or administrative, and then a smaller segment of the list is these major items. So in front of you here today, on attachment number 1, which Liz will go into the details of, but I want to introduce it, is the list of administrative items. And you have a summary of changes, what our proposed action is. And then the calendar for this that we're suggesting to the Planning Commission and to the Board of Commissioners starts today. We're starting the clock today on public process. From here on out, we go through public outreach. We're recommending later in November a Planning Commission public hearing, and then hopefully later in November a recommendation from the Planning Commission to go to the Board. The Board has already been briefed on these items, so they already know what is in front of you today. As we get into late November, early December, we want the rest of this list and your recommendations along with it to go back to the Board for potential adoption in early January. I should point out two things. One is that if any of these items on this list of 33 amendments feels like it's going to be a stickier issue, and if you feel like they don't belong in the administrative category, maybe they're a heavier lift and we need more public input or something like that, we can strike it from the list and put it on a different time frame and then move the rest of them forward. So don't feel like we're stuck with this list. It's not an all or nothing situation. The other thing that I want to point out is that for both of these, for both the administrative updates and for the minor code amendments here, these are both self-imposed deadlines. The calendar that you see here in your materials is self-imposed. It's just our suggestion for how we might move the process forward. There is no external driver for the end date. So the state is not going to come down knocking on our door and threatening us if we don't get things done by January 8th on this list. The second list, which is a shorter list of 3 items, is the list of minor amendments that we are proposing. This list has a slightly longer time frame. Rather than January adoption, we're looking at potentially a February adoption, because these are issues that we expect will probably generate more public engagement and more public input. So we're just building a little bit more time into the schedule. Again, it's a self-imposed schedule, so if we need to stretch it, that's doable. The items on this list include vacation rentals, maximum lot size, and parking area treatment in urban and growth areas. There was, when we presented it to the board earlier this month, a fourth item about frontage improvements, and we've already pulled that from this list because we realized as we started to dig into the analysis of what the frontage improvements were going to require, we realized it was going to just take a, it was going to be a bigger lift than what we wanted to bite off right away here. So we've already struck one item from this list. So if, unless anybody has any questions on the process, I'm going to turn it over to Liz. Do you have any questions on the process so far?
Just said attachment two. I know we're not dealing with that.
Attachment 2 and 4, that's the actual strikeout language that goes with 1 and 3. So okay. 1 and 2 are paired together and 3 and 4 are paired okay. together. Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Liz, who will go through the administrative items, and then after that, then Darren will go through the minor amendment proposals.
I'm also not Liz. And I just want to, sorry about the order, but I want to add a couple of things to this. And early on, I forgot to mention the budget is not going to be adopted until December. So that might still be further changes. Having said that, going back to what Dave just presented to you, just want to let you know we haven't actually conducted our public outreach program yet. So we are going to take it. We already discussed that with the Department Advisory Group. They are very aware of that. But they also nominated somebody, I believe it's Mr. Bill Palmer, to go through the list with us from their perspective, what are the priorities. And we also will take it to different stakeholder group as well. So just want to make sure you are aware that we haven't done the public outreach.
Okay. Thank you.
Out of my mouth. I was going to say that. I am Liz Williams.
Mr. Ward, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Good,
thank
good.
You.
Okay.
You guys hear me okay? Yep. All right. So I'm going to just kind of give you a broad overview of the proposed administrative changes that we're looking at right now, which can be found in Attachment 1. If you're interested in diving into the details, you'll want to take a look at the actual language strikeout, which is Attachment 2. I did want to caveat that there may be some additional changes to the actual language that we're proposing as we go through the public process. So don't be surprised that on November 14th, that language might look a little bit different because it is a work in progress. So I'm not going to go through each one of the items individually. I'm more going to give you a sense of the flavor of the changes that we are proposing. So if that's okay with you, I should say. I'm happy to answer any additional questions that you might have on specific items once I get through this summary. So as part of the administrative batch, we are recommending 33 items to move forward. They are items that will impact Title 12, which is the stormwater drainage. We are looking at one amendment to that title. Title 16, which is the land division and development regulations. We're looking at two amendments within that title. And then Title 17 is where you'll see the bulk of the administrative changes, actually 29 to be specific. And then Title 21 is the land use and development procedures, and there's just one change that is being recommended at this time. So there's various reasons for the changes. Mainly they are to help simplify and help understand existing codes that are on the books. So there are seven items that deal with simplification of code. An example is actually the first item, so ID number 1 on the summary sheet within Attachment 1. That would be changing the permit duration from 360 to 365 days. That's simply because it's easier to remember 1 year than it is 360 days. So again, just trying to be as customer friendly as we can be. Other changes we are looking at for the purpose of efficiency and effectiveness of code. An example of this would be ID 5, which is revising the definition of junk motor vehicles to be consistent with the health district. So this is simply just making sure that we are looking at junk motor vehicles in the same fashion as the health district. Internal code consistency is quite a large number of the items, 19. Items are dealing with internal code consistency. An example of this would be number 8 on your summary sheet. We're looking at reformatting the zoning use tables to be consistent with the land use designations within the comp plan. It's actually a really simple fix, but just adding some additional headings so that when the user is looking at the code, they can easily reference both the comp plan designation and the zoning district that the use would be permitted within. Another example of internal code consistency, we are looking at to avoid inconsistent application of the code, recommending to clarify that dimensions of an accessory dwelling unit would be determined from the exterior measurements of the structure. And this is how the department is currently determining dimensions of a guest house. So it's just internally consistent in making sure that we're looking at things the same way, depending on the different uses. 21 items on the list do deal with clarification of code intent. An example of this, real simple, is that manufactured homes by law are viewed as the same as a single family detached structure. And so we're adding a note within the use table that a single family detached structure also includes a manufactured home. Another example of clarification of code would be removing the reference to performance-based development within the transfer development rights section of the code to understand that all rezones do require, if they are going from a lower intensity zone to a more intensive zone, a transfer development right. And then the last bulk of items really deals with irrelevant code requirements or removing redundancy in code. An example of this would be number 21 on your list, and that is footnote 38, which discusses encroachments into the setback for architectural features on a property. Essentially, there's the same code requirements within footnote 48, and so we are proposing to remove footnote 38 because it's already addressed elsewhere in the code. So Dave kind of went over the timeline that we're looking at for the administrative code, and I would be happy to answer any additional questions that you might have regarding any of the specific items on the list. Richard. Oh, sorry.
You can hand that one to me. Yeah, so you and I think of heated square feet, right? And so a 5.5-inch exterior wall for stud width and a 1/2 inch of sheetrock, you lose it when we dimension for framing on a plan that goes into the permit counter, right? So face of framing kind of rides the rule. And so the way things get submitted is also the way they get calculated typically. And so the dimensions that we use that the builder wanted to know anyway also become the language around how you measure a building. So unfortunately, the heated wall space, insulation included, becomes a part of the calculation. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I believe that is correct, but that's not my area of expertise. I don't know if anyone else in the room can speak to that, but
yeah, so when we measure square footage, it's face of concrete, face of stud wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tom?
I would respond to that, but I really don't know what I'm talking about. Just on the side, there are situations where a person may have a 3,000 square foot barn, which he intends to turn into a ADU by saying I'm only going to use 900 of it for my ADU.
I've done two of those, and the same thing comes into play, right? If you frame a heated space, the outside face of the framing of the heated space is how you take those dimensions. At least that's how I submit them.
Right. I believe in this particular case, number one, we were looking for consistency. If that consistency is problematic, this is the whole point of the public process, is to bring out these issues so that way we can do this correctly. We did check with the building official, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Scott, but we did check with the building official, and this is how it's currently being done, you know, just from a consistency basis. But again, this is the beginning of a public process. This is why we bring it to you, so that way you can give us this kind of feedback. So, thank you.
Tom? Huh?
My real question was, when you were talking about item number 21, footnote 38, did you mention footnote 48 also in that context?
That must have been a mistake.
Okay, because I thought I heard.
Did I misspeak?
I think you did say footnote 48, which deals with sewers.
Yeah.
Right. So that's one of those untouchable footnotes.
But your point is that it had been duplicated within the list of footnotes, and therefore
correct.
38 was a secondary version of the
correct.
Same language.
Correct. Thank you. Any other questions?
I guess just a comment regarding the expresso. I see it's going from 20 feet to 60 feet.
That actually is because the way that the code is written, if you look at the strikeout language for that particular item, the sentence before talks about a stacking lane requires for three vehicles minimum.
Mm-hmm.
And then the following sentence says 20 feet in width. It's supposed to be 60 because each car stall is supposed to be 20 line. Feet.
Right.
So essentially just clarifying the intent of that particular footnote.
Cued as if parallel parked 20 lineal
yes,
feet per
exactly.
vehicle.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, then I'll turn it over to Darren, seeing no additional questions.
So I guess this is going to come back to us on the 14th.
Correct.
In the form of a public hearing
public
at that
hearing.
Point in time?
Correct, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that is the plan.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. If we could, let's do a quick mic check from everyone that side of center. No, I don't think they're working. How about you, Jim? No?
No.
Tom, yours is working okay?
I think so.
No.
No.
Hello.
Yeah, so it looks like from Tom that
Tom broke it.
Mm-hmm.
It's wired in series.
Parallel.
I turned back on it. Yeah. Test. Oh, here we go. Hello. Test.
Test.
Okay.
There we go.
Mic.
Tom, one more time. Yep. It's the on button.
Give me just a moment to see if this will work. Okay, we got it working. For the record, Darren Gurney with Department of Community Development. I'll be discussing the minor revisions that we have before you tonight. And it is great to see everybody here again. It's been a while since I've been on this podium. So our minor revisions tonight are primarily three items. You have vacation rentals, maximum lot size, and parking areas and the requirements within urban growth areas. The vacation rentals, if you remember, those were an item that were discussed during the comprehensive plan update. You know, we introduced language that required that they obtain the same permits necessary as a bed and breakfast would. So in most circumstances, you have an administrative conditional use permit for four rooms or less. Anything more than that, you would have a conditional use permit.
As part of that effort, we have continued to receive commentary from the public. They have not been able to be formalized into formal complaints because of the way the code is written and because of the way we deal with our code complaints until they are officially in our system as a customer resource management item. Then they don't get recorded, but we do have some calls that have come in that have prompted us to come up with language that would require a permit moving forward 6 months from the date of adoption. If you have an existing vacation rental or one that would be new, you would have to come in to get a permit for continued operation. As part of that, you would also need to identify a registered agent that can be contacted. And this primarily comes from the fact that we want to provide the tools that allows neighbors to handle these issues amongst themselves instead of an escalation to, say, a call to the police saying that there's a party next door. Instead of that call to the police, they might be able to call that agent and request that they address an issue where there's a party going on at 2 a.m. in the morning, or your neighbors are walking across shoreline that is actually in ownership not related to that vacation rental. So the primary goal behind that language is to provide that avenue of either in having conditions that are met through a permit and also to allow for that discussion between neighbors. The maximum lot size, if you remember that from the comprehensive plan update as well, we are trying to be responsive to the intent of that language, and the intent was to try and achieve your minimum densities, at least in the urban growth areas. And what we found is that that subdivision is not necessarily the only thing that achieves that density. So you'll see in the exact language that if you meet that minimum density, it would not be necessary to subdivide. In addition to that, we also found circumstances where if you were to subdivide, it would create parcels that are almost completely encumbered with critical areas or something to where it's not developable. And there you'll see the language that identifies if it's a net developable acreage that is greater than 18,000 instead of just gross, that would be the trigger. And so we're trying to address that issue up front here. Finally, the parking lot and paved areas. So within urban growth areas, right now the language identifies as durable and dustless as required for parking areas. And for clarification purposes, we are including it as a paved area instead of just the durable and dustless. There were misinterpretations that were occurring that we've tried to refrain from allowing those gravel parking lots in an urban area where your expectation is a paved surface. So, again, if you have questions about these specifically, we know that these will garner a little bit more attention from the public, which is why we've identified them as minor and moving forward with a longer timeline. And also, if you have further questions or requests for additional information that you think you may want during your deliberations, that's something we'd like to hear. Mr. Murphy?
Real quick, just your middle paragraph on vacation rentals. You know, currently it's only newly created vacation rentals. You referenced June 30th, 2016. Something else went into effect in that regard at that time?
The comprehensive plan update and Title 17 regulations.
That is, okay, so that's the date of reference for June 30th, 2016. Okay, got it. Second question, what if you were to change a long-term rental to an Airbnb? Is that like a change of, because that is now a vacation rental scenario.
it would be a short-term rental scenario, yes.
Right, which speaks to the transiency, but I haven't done anything to the property except change the way I rent it. Just something to think about if the language isn't clear yet.
Yes.
The VRBO and Airbnb thing.
Mm-hmm. The language, I will have to check it, but we, I believe we do include the bed and breakfast as well as vacation rentals. The long-term rental, determining that it's vacation rental versus long-term, is in the definition in 17.110.
Got it. Thanks.
Tom, just to complicate your life just a little bit more.
Thank you.
It is not yet a big problem in Kitsap County, but I could, but it could be. There is a an Airbnb sort of arrangement coming forward that's already in Kitsap called Hip Camp, which is you can Google that.
It's RVs.
Yeah, it's a short-term rental of a space for camping, and the camping could include anything from mobile homes to yurts to a tent. But
fifth wheels also.
Yeah, right. Duration is indeterminate, not determined, but you might want to think about that as long as you're getting into this.
Okay. And is that along the lines of more like a temporary mobile home park, or are you talking more like a recreational facility that's got
Someone turning a fifth wheel into an Airbnb. That's what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just know that that'll show up in the next 3 weeks in conversation.
And it could be one of those things neighbors could complain about. And absolutely. If you want to get a code in place for them to deal with it, well, this might be the time.
Okay.
You know, I guess I'd be curious as to the number of complaints and if they're sheer volume, and also if we're looking at them concentrated in a few particular properties. So I would be interested in that information for when we're going over this. And I guess, so you did indicate less than four bedrooms, an administrative CUP, that's what's being proposed?
For most zones, it's an ACUP. In most of the zones, it identifies the administrative conditional use permit / conditional use permit with a footnote attached. And that stipulation in the footnote is the four bedrooms or less or more than that.
And specifically regarding vacation rentals.
Yes.
Okay.
And bed and breakfasts.
So if they're not regulated now, and you say vacation rentals existing prior to June 30th, 2016, how do you know?
And that's
I mean, no offense. I guess that seems like it's nice. I guess you're trying to grandfather some people in, but it seems like there's no mechanism to actually say that you were or were not.
To answer your question, the regulations that we are proposing at this point is actually moving forward whether you were pre-existing or a new use. You would still have to come in for that permit. So there's a grace period in there, but you would have to come in for the permit to continue operations. And in that circumstance, it's likely one that when you have a complaint filed,
I was going to say, you're almost when you get a relying complaint, on civil complaint versus self-reporting, right?
To some degree, yes.
Well, and it would seem perhaps frequency might, you know, for some reason, I guess when I think of a vacation rental, maybe it's not quite as frequent as maybe you would think with a bed and breakfast. I know you're lumping them together. I don't know if that's something to be considered, but okay. It just kind of comes to mind when I think of them. I mean, it's kind of like someone have a wedding, you know, whatever. I assume they're probably usually not having large events, but people are away on their own, or maybe they're getting carried away where they typically wouldn't be if they were back home. But I don't know. Just thinking of
unless I have the data in front of me, I wouldn't actually want to go into something like that right now. So, but that.
We really need that in order to know what we're talking about and why we're trying to regulate this, I guess is my point. So let's make sure we have the information available for us so we know exactly, you know, why we're talking about doing this.
Your point being, have civil complaints tripled countywide?
Mm-hmm.
or there's six properties that have started doing this and they get six phone calls a day. We don't have the answer to that yet.
Okay. That is all that I have for this evening. Of course, we are moving for the same timeline in terms of the hearing. We do expect that hearing to have more involvement, and of course, there may be the possibility of an extension of a public comment period for written comments. So we have taken that into account in our scheduling. So,
two coming on the 14th, same evening?
Same evening for these two code amendment batches.
So what are we doing to reach out to the public on this? It's a little bit of an odd one because, I mean, are you known vacation rentals? Are you notifying people within 500 feet of that? Or I'm just curious, what, are you doing anything different as far as the public notice for this particular item?
We have not done anything different at this point, but we are working on an outreach mechanism.
I think you should do a sting operation, put an ad out for anybody that responds to it.
Or just do your own search on VVRO and Airbnb for every single rental and postcard them.
All right. I'll just go into a little bit about our outreach approach and what we're looking at. So we are looking to develop over time a sustainable approach to code amendment process so that we can make sure that people are informed, not only before we start working on language so that we can work with the public, but also after when we're in the process so they know when meetings are. So we are collaborating with our outreach coordinator within the department to build the necessary infrastructure for this. And during the month of October specifically, we are looking at piggybacking on some meetings that are already scheduled to talk about electronic plan review, which is also being rolled out by the department. So we'll be going to all of our Citizen Advisory Council meetings through that and other stakeholder groups of on the proposed code amendments. We are also developing a web page, which will be dedicated to our code development process. And over time, we're hoping that this will become a one-stop shop for everything related to code development here at Kitsap County. We're looking to develop a gov delivery system so that you can get those nice text messages. I don't know if you're signed up for gov delivery, but if you're not, you should. You get a lot of great information on the proposed projects that are coming out, not only from our department, but others. And we are also exploring how we can use social media to get more engagement through the public. So stay tuned for that. We are, like I said, it's a work in progress. We're trying to, as much as we can, reach out to various groups and stakeholders that would be impacted by these changes. Our goal is to not have surprises. So when implementation time comes, we want to be ready to have brochures and applications or other documentation that's required for these particular code updates so that staff is trained and the public is aware of what the new expectation is so we can avoid frustration moving forward. So that's kind of a little into our approach for outreach related to this batch. And we're open to other suggestions if you have them.
Thank you. Any other questions?
One of the folks up here at the dais just did a little search on Hip Camp, and there also appears to be tent camp renting on cannabis farms properties. So think about how deep you want to go if you're knee deep now.
Thank you.
I see him making a note. No.
Yeah, we both just booked one, but whatever.
There's one that's on a cannabis farm, too.
That's what I'm saying.
It's all about the campfires, right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you. It's great to see you guys again. And unless there are any additional questions, I'll just turn that back over to the chair.
I don't think so. Thank you.
So one closing note, as Louisa said, we've been looking at staffing levels and figuring out workload issues and things like that in the department. And as we're moving forward with this first batch of proposed amendments, that we're just trying to get the ball rolling on whittling down this box of 200. We're working on our outreach processes, as Liz described. We're also looking to migrate towards a more regular schedule and more predictable and transparent schedule of code updates. So that way everybody knows at certain times of the year we're going to be doing this. One of the options that we're considering, and this is completely workload dependent on this at this point, is we're considering whether we should be doing two batches a year, spring and fall, on a predictable drumbeat. And then we also want to get the comprehensive plan docket on a similar regular schedule, so that way it's more predictable, more transparent, and then we can get the information out to people a little bit more predictable manner. So these two batches that you have here are our first shot at trying to whittle away at that group of 200, but we're also using this as an opportunity to, looking forward into 2018 and 2019, migrating towards a more regular process. So thank you for your time.
So the shoreline management plan, what is the timing on that? You said that's coming.
Shoreline management plan is still a couple of years out, but at the end of 2018 is when we start looking at funding and guidance from ecology on that. So we have a little bit of work towards the end of 2018, and then in 2019 is when we really start to devote some attention to it. So we have this brief window. We're trying to take advantage of it. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you. Well, anything else for the good of the order?
Might do a reminder on the next meeting is not on the first Tuesday. It's the second one.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.